Good afternoon. We will call together the Legacy Funding Finance Committee to order. And I do believe we have a quorum in the room. So could I ask Representative Green to approve the minutes from February 6th?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move the minutes from February 6th.
Okay, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. Motion has been accepted. Okay, we've got a full agenda and animals in the house as well today. We are going to hear from the Como Park Zoo. We're going to hear from the Minnesota Children's Museum, Minnesota Public Radio, and Minnesota Humanities Center. We're going to do a little change in the agenda so we can accommodate people's schedules today. And so I'd actually like to pull up the last item on the agenda, and I would call Representative Bliss up, and I am going to move House File 806 before the committee to be laid over for possible inclusion in the Legacy Omnibus Bill. And Representative Bliss, please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I am looking to advance. You caught me off guard here. What's the file number?
806.
HF 806. And this is an appropriation for the Veterans Voices Program. And we have a couple of guests here that would like to speak on that program.
Okay, thank you. With our first guest, could you please introduce yourself for the record? Just introduce yourself in the microphone.
Madam Chair and members, I'm David O'Fallon. I'm the president of the Minnesota Humanities Center, and the bill being introduced is for all the programs and purposes of the center, but especially including Veterans Voices. And I will walk you through some materials, but I'd like you also to know of the guests that I have asked to join me today. So would you like the guest to introduce himself at this moment?
Certainly.
Hello, Madam Chair. My name is Paul Riedner. I'm from Redding, Minnesota. I served in the U.S. Army as a deep-sea diver for 4 years with one tour to Iraq and now working with the Minnesota Humanities Center.
Okay, thank you. Would you like to provide your testimony at this time?
Madam Chair, I'd like to walk through an overview of the center first and then include Mr. Reidner's testimony in a few minutes, if that would be all right.
That would be great. And I think, do we have copies in our folders as well of your presentation?
Thank you. Members, I'd like to draw your attention first to this. I have a pretty low-tech presentation, by the way, so it's mostly me and some paper. And I'd like to call your attention to this long legal size page, because that is the overview of the program and the budgets and how they have been used over the past few years. So it should have been at the very top of the materials handed to you.
Okay.
Make sure that everybody has this.
Okay, does everybody have what we're looking at? Great.
Great. So a couple of key things about the center that I'd like you to know. We're a nonprofit organization with a state charter, so we have this statewide responsibility. We have zero authority. We don't license anybody. We don't regulate anything. We can't command anybody's attention. So we have to be driven by doing things that other people find valuable, and that's my litmus test. Can we do things that strengthen the state, that bring people together, that add to our citizen engagement, if you will? That's the spirit of the center. So this is an overview of the budget and some examples of the work that we're doing. You'll see two big halves on this page in front of you. The left-hand green box is the funds that are appropriated specifically to the Humanities Center for the purposes and programs of the center, including especially Veterans Voices, but education in a broad number of ways. We have a commitment to making sure that voices that have often been left out or not heard are indeed represented and heard. So we fund education, educator institutes. We work with K-12 education, and we make sure, for example, through things like creating new literature with the Somali community, with the Hmong community, with the Asian Pacific community that did not exist before. We created this anthology with the African American community of black writers in Minnesota, which I'm really pleased existed or did not exist before, but went into a second printing in just a couple of months after we created it. And stories from young Hmong women, third generation Hmong women, who were able to tell their own story about becoming a new American, if you will, but honoring the culture and traditions of their deep and long and ancient culture as well, told in their own stories. So I'm happy to pass these around. I just don't have enough copies for everybody, Madam Chair. So just as examples, we keep investing in new work, work that's been missing, work that fits a need in our rapidly changing state. You see a column over there called Veterans Voices, Programs and Events. And I think most of you know, but I'd like you to feel really proud of this. Minnesota is the only state to have set aside an entire month forever. October will be Veterans Voices Month in Minnesota. And we fill that with activities and education materials and resources and all kinds of examples of engaging the veteran with the multiple communities across the state. So that's the workshops under there. And then you'll see a square on the right-hand side of your page as you look at it, pass-through appropriations. And here is where we live at the discretion of the legislature. Sometimes you ask us to fund children's museums, other times not. Sometimes you ask us to be the home base for a heritage grant to the city of St. Paul or to other historical societies, and we do that. But that's totally at your discretion, so I don't carry those bills, but I'm very happy to be a good partner with that. I think two outstanding examples of this for us have been the partnership with the Somali community, Kujung. They've been a good partner with us because you asked us to pass through funding for them in the past. You see that. And we've also worked very closely over multiple years with the Minnesota Indian Affairs Council, who are present in the room with us today just as good friends, for long-term commitments on understanding the sovereignty, the sovereign nations that we live with, and the education that has sometimes been less than fully developed around the sovereign nations and the rest of the state. So those are examples of ways in which this funding, I think, meets real needs, supports us as a state coming together. And with your permission, Madam Chair, just a few examples.
Certainly. Go ahead.
Behind this. So behind that first page is the map that shows you that we are, in fact, all over the state. I want you to know this. We take our statewide responsibility very seriously. Some examples of the program and the Veterans Voices program itself, workshops, materials, education resources, events, gatherings. I'll come back to that in a moment. A document labeled Absent Narratives we have created over the last 4 years or so, 1,000 new resources online and in print that did not exist before. That's with the legacy funding.
Okay, Mr. O'Fallon, yes. Representative Erdahl, I think, has a question. Representative Erdahl.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Not so much a question as a comment. Working with Dr. O'Fallon and the Humanities Center over the years in a lot of these different projects, the treaties matter, Kajug, language programs, they've always been a very good partner with the Legacy Committee in working with those projects to make sure that the money gets where it's supposed to go and it's spent the way it's supposed to be spent. Dr. Fallon does a fine job, but of course we would expect no less from a Litchfield High School graduate. Representative Bliss, a question. This isn't your first bill up, is it? before this committee. I was wondering, these treats came from who?
Como.
Como, okay, well, thanks to Como, but you know, I'm sure that, Representative Bliss, you did bring treats to your first committee hearing. Well, apparently some learning has to happen around this place. Thank you.
Any further comment, Representative Riddall?
I'm done.
Okay. Please proceed, Mr. O'Fallon.
Just a couple more points, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Erdahl. I am a proud Dragon graduate of Litchfield High School, I must say. I was mentioning that we've created 1,000 new resources over the last few years, and I mean literally resources that did not exist before the capacity of the legacy funding to help them be created. And I want to point out one other thing, a relatively new project for us in conjunction with the Smithsonian. I'm sure that many times you ask questions such as, yeah, we gave you money, you did a program, what happened? Well, we make a big point in our programs of saying one of the things we like to make sure happens is we strengthen relationships. We try to bring people into the room that were not in the same room together before, whether it's with veterans or, in this case, around an issue that the state feels ever more deeply. It's called water, right? And it's getting a lot of attention. So we've got this document, and on the back, I'll just show you one thing. We actually evaluate the strength of the relationships that are created in the communities in which we work. We have a team of people who do interviews and assessments and talk with people, and every community is increasing the diversity and the size and the strength of their relationships. They're bringing partners together that were not existing before. So we actually invest in evaluation. And I would just make one other point, because it often comes up on that tall first sheet where we talk about the budget. I'd point a couple of things to you on the bottom. Because we're a private nonprofit, we get audited by a firm every single year, of course, and occasionally by the OLA. And I want to point out to you that our overhead as an organization is 8.5%, not 20% or 30% or 15%. So our administrative overhead to keep the shop running and keep it open is 8.5%. My joke has been, we're one bureaucrat deep, that's me. So there's certainly nobody else to hang your head on or hang your blame on or whatever. But as I mentioned, a key part of what we're doing is promising to strengthen relationships. And with your permission, I'd like to ask our Veterans Voices awardee, Paul Reidner, to speak.
Thank you, Mr. O'Fallon. Please proceed, Mr. Reidner.
Thank you. So I already introduced myself, but I found coming back from service into this community that I was struggling, and since that time I've been learning about PTSD, about moral injury, and about the things that were bothering me, and how to help. And now I run a organization called the Veteran Resilience Project, and I interview veterans and tell their story to the community and how to better understand. And David and the program at Minnesota Humanities Center reached out to us, let us know to myself, because I won this award, and it's had a profound effect on me. And what it really gave me was a community. I came back to a community that wanted to learn about my experience and gave us a safe place to grapple with ideas. And what I think Humanities Center is really great at is figuring out what's left unsaid and then kind of dealing with that together. And so having gone to war and experienced things that that nobody else in the country will unless they've been there. But everyone else in the country will vote the next time we plan to go to war. And so I think one of the only places you're going to hear an accurate account of what's actually going on is from a veteran who is in the right mental state, who is in the right place. They can. So I think we owe it to our community as military veterans to get sharp mentally, physically, to come back and think about war and our experience, and then share it in a way that can be understood. And Humanity Center has been that place for me and a lot of the people that I've come to know through their programs. So, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ridner. Are there any other folks in the audience today who would like to testify on the Bill 806 before us? Anybody else? Okay. Seeing no other testifiers, I want to thank the two of you and thank Representative Bliss, and would like to ask the committee for a discussion or questions. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is this an increase? Are you asking for an increase this year?
Madam Chair and Representative Green, yes, it is. It's asking for an increase of $150,000 a year in legacy funding for the purposes of the Humanity Center's program, and especially to support the growing network, not only of veterans but others, but primarily of the Veterans Voices program.
Representative Green?
I'm sure. I'm trying. I didn't do enough study on this, and I apologize. But it looks like there's been some specific appropriations that have been removed in the veterans program. Is that true?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, no. No specific appropriations have been moved. The language in a previous bill, I think last biennium, said, here's $850,000 a year, and you may use $100,000 of it for the Veterans Voices program. As you can see, we far exceeded that. I hope that's not a problem. But we'll continue to support this program. Sometimes, not in our legacy bill, but other bills that get attached to us, there's a specific appropriation saying, for example, you will give $250,000 to the Children's Museum or $100,000 to a civic education program or something. But nothing has been removed from this bill that would cause us to not continue to support and fund the veterans program.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Green? Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Thiessen?
Thank you. I loved what the testifier said about this organization being a place where voices that aren't heard are heard. I mean, the Humanity Center is really a huge treasure in Minnesota, and has done really amazing work for our state. And so I hope we fully support this appropriation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Thiessen. Other comments, questions from the committee? Okay, Representative Bliss, do you have any final words? You might have some final words for Representative Erdahl, I'm not sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I appreciate you hearing this bill, and I urge a yes vote. And to Representative Erdahl's point, I have learned my lesson, and it will not happen again. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative Bliss. So, House File 806 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Legacy Omnibus Bill. Thank you so much today for our guests.
Thank you.
All right, great. Okay, we are going to move to the Como Zoo. Representative Lesh will be presenting, will be here momentarily, but why don't we just move forward and have our testifiers get into position and ready to go. Okay, I think what we are going to do is just have you begin, in interest of time, have you begin with your testimony. So if you could introduce yourself, and if you'd like to both introduce yourself and then begin. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And for those who were able to come out, first of all, from the record, my name is Michelle Furr. I'm the Director and Campus Manager for Como Park Student Conservatory. And I think our visitors in the back are going to be wrapping up. But if you had a chance to meet, we had Chloe, who is our Hoffman's Two-Toed Sloth. Chloe is our resident in Tropical Encounters and is just celebrated our 10th anniversary in that exhibit in November. She goes to a number of school programs around the state as well as programs at Como. And then we had Cupid, who is an African penguin, and yes, his name is Cupid because his birthday's tomorrow, and he also is an ambassador that goes to schools and programs around the state. You want to introduce yourself?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chairman, thank you. My name is Jackie Seek, and I'm the president of Como Friends.
So I'm going to give a quick overview of Como Park Zoo and Conservatory and then some past experiences that we've had with the Legacy Arts and Culture Heritage funding. So Como Park Zoo and Conservatory is Minnesota's most visited cultural attraction with just shy of 2 million annual visitors. And our visitors come from all over the state of Minnesota. Nearly 400,000 came from greater Minnesota, which is more than those who come from the city of St. Paul. Como is free of charge. We don't charge for admission, parking, or special attractions. And because of that, we attract a very diverse audience racially, economically, and geographically. In 2016, Como had a record year of voluntary donations with over $1.5 million donated. That is when you come into the visitor center, you see one of our 1,200 volunteers at our acrylic box, and in lieu of admission, we ask for a voluntary donation. Our voluntary donations represent 21% of our operating budget, and the City of St. Paul, who owns and operates Como Park Zoo and Conservatory, provides 43% of our operating budget through their general fund. And doing some quick math, taking our total budget along with our admission numbers or our estimated attendance, we came out with a $3.74 per visitor to operate. And comparatively to other cultural institutions in this community, that cost ranges anywhere between $14 to $47 per visitor. Como is an economic engine. Recently, Como worked with Sapphire Consulting, which is a pro bono student consulting group comprised solely of members from the Alpha Kappa Psi professional business fraternity at the University of Minnesota. And they did an economic impact study using methodology that has been done in previous studies, and the results were staggering. Over $162 million in the local economy is produced each year because Como Park Zoo and Conservatory exists, which is about over 2,000 jobs. And that's from people who come to Como and have to purchase gas in your communities or buy lunch or dinner on their way, as well as the funds that we spend to operate. And that doesn't include any of our capital investment. For every dollar that we spend on capital projects, $2 is contributed to the local economy. Science learning happens at Como. A growing body of research shows that access to non-formal learning environments like zoos close the achievement gap between low and income families. Over 425,000 students from across the upper Midwest are served through a variety of programs with a focus on STEM and Como's mission to inspire the public to value the presence of living things. The public and private sector have come together to provide an even more opportunities to these students along with improvements to Como. Como Friends, as Jackie introduced herself, is our nonprofit partner. And together we are an effective private-public partnership working together to leverage state and city funds through individuals, corporations, foundations to serve our growing and diverse audience. Our public investment has rallied private support for both capital projects and programs, and over the past decade has raised over $37 million. At Como, we have been successful stewards of the legacy funding for a number of initiatives, including STEM-based education programs, a youth engagement program, habitat renewal, a Minnesota garden that will be opening in June, special exhibits, and introducing music to a variety of new audiences. We have seen firsthand the impact that these and similar programming can have in our ability to reach Minnesotans across the state with the work that we do. For the next biennium of fiscal year 18 and 19, we respectfully request $1.5 million per year to continue these valued programs and increase our reach for even more Minnesotans. I'm going to give a brief example of some of the programs that we've done and how it can be expanded. But the first and most popular program and has the highest demand is our Como Residency Program. The residency program offers week-long experiences for an entire class to use the zoo and conservatory as their classroom, with our professional education staff teaming and partnering with their teachers on their curriculum. Each year, we reach over 750 students, and we've expanded the program to reach even more in greater Minnesota by modifying the program where our team goes to their school for 3 days, and they come to Como with free transportation for the rest of the week. I have a brief video that I'd like to show that shows residency program in action, if I can get it to play, which did happen. Bear with my technology. Oh, A lot of smiles and fun, but most important, once-in-a-lifetime learning. We survey students at the beginning of the week and at the end of the week, and some of the results show that a 61% increase in students who said that they now know how to use engineering to solve problems, a 30% increase in students' knowledge of what can be recycled and composted, and a 25% increase in students who said that they now know that their actions affect plants and animals around the world. Other STEM-based programs that we are offering as part of the Legacy Funds is our Little Explorers, giving over 3,000 preschoolers each year their first taste of informal education. If you come any Thursday morning, a new theme is offered with free play and engagement. We switched the program in the summer months, called Project Passport, to cater to older students, which use plant animal ambassadors like Chloe and Cupid that you met earlier to create this next generation of conservationists. And then we offer Nature's Engineer, which is a high-dosage STEM-based program. And our teachers that we survey say that it really does help to enhance their STEM curriculum in their year. A new program that we introduced last biennium was our Youth Engagement Program. This is a team leadership development program for 9th through 12th graders who develop an action plan and projects for their community. We have been able to leverage private dollars through Como Friends to expand the program with a week-long kickoff and micro-grants to execute those community projects. We focus some of the funding on adding immersive and expanding educational experiences and habitats with interactives and interpretive graphics. This spring, we'll be completing phase one of our large cat area and hope to move into phase two and three in future years. The Como Regional Park is rich in history, and in preserving the formal gardens has been well received. This June, we'll be opening the new Minnesota Garden with a new art installation as well. Get Closer has been part of Como's motto for over a century, and that is ever-present in special exhibits like Blooming Butterflies that returned in 2016 with over 95,000 visitors in this immersive space. Other exhibits have included local artists, photographers, and exhibitions. If you ever find yourself looking for something to do on a Sunday evening to get your flora and fauna fix, stop at the conservatory for Music Under Glass, or When the Weather Warms Up for our Groovin' in the Garden series. This music series offers musicians from across the state a venue and audience to introduce their diverse sounds. In the past year, over 7,500 people have taken advantage of these free concerts. We've expanded the program to Music Mondays with a roaming band on the grounds, enhancing the experience and building music appreciation to the general public. As you can see, we have been able to offer a number of options to reach as many as we can, both on-site and off-site, high dosage to brief touches utilizing these funds. None of the programs would be possible without the Arts and Cultural Heritage Funds. So thank you for your past and continued support. These funds further allow Como to expand our education support for all Minnesotans, allowing us to interweave arts, culture, and history into their experience while preserving our 100-year-old facility for generations to come as the top cultural destination for Minnesota. We'll take questions. I think Jackie had a few comments, and then we'll take questions. Thanks, Michelle. So Como Friends is a nonprofit partner of
Could you state your name again just for the record?
Sure. Yes, Madam Chairman. My name is Jackie Steakin. I'm the president of Como Friends, and we are the nonprofit partner of Como Park Zoo and Conservatory. Our work primarily focuses on securing private dollars from corporations, foundations, and individuals for the zoo and the conservatory. And over the last 15 years, we've contributed $37 million that have made possible major capital improvements, new gardens and habitats, expanded education and conservation programs, and best practices in animal care and horticulture. Included is pairing private support with the investment from the Minnesota State Legislature through the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund in our high-demand STEM-based education programs and in helping to preserve Cumble's collection for the 21st century audience. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have about this highly successful public-private partnership between Cumble Park Zoo and Conservatory, the state of Minnesota, and Cumble Friends.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And as you were presenting, we were presented with the beautiful heart-shaped Valentine cookies you brought today. Thank you very much. Beautiful. Representative Erdahl has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was intrigued by the butterflies a little bit. Now, are these primarily native Minnesota butterflies?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, actually, when we do that, we actually bring butterflies from all over the world into the habitat. We are permitted through USDA to acquire the butterflies. We bring them in the pupae stage, and then they emerge, and then we release them into the butterfly hut. So they are all butterflies from around the world.
Hey. Representative Erdahl.
No, thank you, Madam Chair. So the butterflies are in a self-contained, they are born, live, and die at Como.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. As part of the permitting process, every butterfly is accounted for throughout its entire life cycle while it's at Como.
Nice if you could raise a few thousand monarchs and just let them go.
It's possible now that we have the infrastructure.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions? Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Am I reading this right? Are you asking for an increase of $500,000 a year?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, yes. Our request is $1.5 million. We were receiving $1 million per year in the past biennium. It's similar to what our request had been in the last biennium so that we can expand our programs for even broader reach throughout the entire state, both in the residency and the number of the initiatives that I mentioned.
Okay. Looks like you're going to be receiving these funds through the – excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Okay. Looks like you're going to be receiving these funds through the Department of Administration. Can you tell me – if you know if they've resolved their problems with the OLA report?
Madam Chair, Representative, I am not familiar if they have resolved those pieces.
Representative Green?
Do you have any kind of a backup plan? Because if they have not, then they won't be able to administer these funds. Do you have anything in the works?
Madam Chair, Representative Green, so all of these projects would not exist without these funds. I know what the percentage, if that's what you're referring to, the percentage that they're holding for this year, we've resolved that for this biennium with a decrease in some of the program offerings that we were offering this spring. But with something like residency program, without funding from the legacy fund, that wouldn't exist. We would not be able to offer it from the next biennium.
Okay.
Is there anyone in the audience here or anyone here from Como that could answer Representative Green's question? Anybody else? No. Thank you. Representative Green, did you have additional follow-up? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So do you work with other zoos across the state?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, yes. We are an accredited institution through the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which is our accrediting body. So there's 228 around the country that we work collaboratively with a number of projects from species survival plan to educational programs, including the accredited zoo here in Minnesota, the Minnesota Zoo, as well as the unaccredited Lake Superior Zoo up in Duluth.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think there's a zoo up in your area too, right?
Are you looking at me?
Yeah.
There's a Duluth Zoo.
Aren't there? But isn't there's one near Grand Rapids, I think, too, isn't there, in that area?
Not in Grand Rapids.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, there is the Little Falls Zoo
that is
also still working on getting their accreditation as well.
Okay. So do you, Madam Chair?
Yeah, Representative Thiessen.
So do you work with those? I mean, so if we're having people coming in to St. Paul from Greater Minnesota, are you working on expanding this program to working with those zoos so people don't have to go as far so they can have the program there?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, right now none of the programs are collaborative in what we're looking at on these programs. We do work with them on a number of other initiatives, but on the educational programs right now we currently are not.
Okay. And Madam Chair, thank you. And I mean, in the program sounds good. Do you have any information that it actually makes a difference in people doing better in STEM And we had a lot of people come in here and use the word STEM because everybody likes STEM, but do we have any actual results?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, we do survey, like I said, for the residency program, we do a pre and post survey. And now that the program is in its third year, we're going to be able to get some quantifiable information from those teachers. We have a lot of subjective data from the teachers of what they're seeing, the difference from them being able to use the appropriate language and those inferences that they're learning and how they're applying the engineering. It's really hard to get some of those measurable pieces, but we're working on how we can capture that so that we could answer that effectively.
And thank you. Just one last thing. And as you're doing that, are you getting what information do you have on kind of closing the achievement gap or reducing inequities, that kind of thing? Any data you have on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, we have sort of that pieces of what people are learning and what they're taking away with from before they start the program to when they stop. So their increase in knowledge is increasing. We're still, because of it still being in its infancy, we're still trying to capture that quantifiable data on the long-term effect.
Representative Thiessen.
Well, thank you. And Madam Chair, and just not for that particular program, but kind of for all the programs you're using the legacy money for?
Mm-hmm.
That I think it would be helpful. I actually think, Madam Chair, it would be great if our committee, maybe I should put in a bill, but if we would actually have everybody that gets money come back with reports on how they're affecting, geographic, racial, socioeconomic inequity across the state, because it probably should be something we're focusing more on. So if you could get any information you have on that, that would be great.
Thank you, Representative Batista. It sounds like we're looking for outcome data and change that happens as a result of the programs. Great opportunity for young children to participate, hands-on, great learning experience. Other questions? Representative Murphy.
Just, Madam Chair, just for clarification, is all the money that Como Zoo and Conservatory receives from the state of Minnesota from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, Legacy Fund?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, we also receive a little bit of fund in the Lottery and Loon DNR funding, and the Metro Parks has a small percentage. So we get two little grants to those two programs for Como Park Zoo and Conservatory. So I'm going to go back a slide just because I'm going to say it right. So about 8% of our operating budget comes from the state, 9%, and that's including the legacy funding.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, then could you tell me what the initial grant that you received from the Legacy Fund was?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, back in 2008 in the first appropriation. The first appropriation, I believe all three zoos were in the category of want to say $114,000, and then there was a competitive grant opportunity for another 25% of the pot that was assigned to zoos, and we were a recipient of around $65,000 to $70,000 that first appropriation.
Representative Murphy, follow up.
And Madam Chair, and have you been complying with the outcomes that are in the guide?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes. We follow that very closely, the outcomes, and then as part of our work plan, we do put some outcome-based. We don't have what Representative Thiessen is looking for in some of those outcomes. We're looking more at the reach and expanding, as well as the number of people that we serve. So we do look at the guidelines in the 25-year framework when we're developing some of the new initiatives, like the youth engagement program that was launched last year. We also with some of those pieces of how we use the funds, that's why you can see it's broad across from educational programming to some of those music series, so that we're reaching all of the right appropriations for what the essence of those funds for.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Representative Lilly has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine's more of a comment. My family's went through a lot of years where things were pretty tight financially, and Como basically saved our lives. It was kind of a place that we could go in the winter and just, and I believe that we didn't really put much into the box at that point of our lives. And I'm just more of a comment. I'm pretty impressed that you can do all that for $2.74 per customer, client, or visit. And then I'd be curious who the, you don't have to say out loud, but maybe we can find out who the $47 one or something you said that's something's going on there that it's, but maybe there's a reason. I don't know. But just really a blessing. I know that you put up, you had that garden. You said that it won't open until June, but I think I visited a garden that was Legacy Dollars because I believe I saw a sign there in the last a year or so. But anyways, really a lot of good things going on, and I know you can't really measure some of what Representative Thiessen's saying, but certainly the faces on the kids and just watching them discover just all the different things and playing certainly has a lot of value, but I don't know that we can always put numbers on some of that, but not that it's bad to ask the question, but thank you very much, and what a treasure. I don't live in St. Paul, but a lot of us come in to use it and enjoy it, and it's really a blessing, so thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative Lilly, yes, the forecourt that you mentioned, the gardens, we opened the Centennial Garden. That was funded in the last biennium as part of reintroducing and preserving some of the rich history of Colma Regional Park that had all of these formal gardens. And so the new Minnesota Garden will be adjacent to that and will bring homage to the 150-year history of the regional park.
Representative Lilly, any follow-up?
No, thank you.
Okay, well, I thank you for the testifiers. I see Representative Lesh is here. Would you like to present the bill?
I already did that.
Present Bill 715.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Myself and Representative Gunther were just over arguing vigorously over the rules in Rules Committee, so we that's why we were absent. He won, by the way. I don't know if you're wondering who won. He won. But obviously the folks here have done an outstanding job as stewards of Como. I've been privileged to represent the whole of Como Park now, including the Zoo Conservatory, since Representative Hausman lost it in redistricting. About 7 years or 5 years ago, but it really is a regional jewel, and it is a park that works. And my predecessor, Tom Ostoff, well, Representative Murphy remembers him. I don't know if there's anyone else on the committee Representative Wagenius remember him. His priority was making sure that zoo and conservatory remained free, because it's oftentimes we don't recall and appreciate what that amenity does for the entire area. If you don't have a lot of money, you can bring your kid to a picnic at the park and visit the zoo, and it doesn't cost a lot of money. I remember once every 2 years my family and I got to go to Valley Fair, and my mom packed a cooler lunch because we couldn't afford the food inside the park. But Como was like that. Como was that option. You got to have options like that for people. And the investment we're talking about now sustains it in the way that it needs to be sustained, because it is a zoo and conservatory that works. So that's all I'll say about that for now. And you've already heard a lot of details about the project itself, which is an important piece of how it is sustained. So thank you very much, Madam Chair, and I'm honored to be able to carry this and appreciate your consideration. And I appreciate the Chair's support as well.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Lish. Is there any further discussion on the bill? No further discussion. Then I move that House File 17 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Legacy Omnibus Bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Oh, yeah. Hey, by the way, Madam Chair, everyone make sure you eat a cookie here. Very important.
Thank you.
I know Representative Murphy's going
to. Thank you to the presenters.
Representative Lesh, here's one for you. Right here.
Ready to go. Okay, we're ready to go. Representative Erdahl.
I'll take one. Thank you. Jim, Steve. Mary?
Not right now.
After. I saw that look.
I saw that.
everybody gets.
Representative Erdahl, would you like to move House File 1017 before the committee to be laid over for possible inclusion in the legacy omnibus bill?
Yes, I'll move House File 1017 to be held over for likely possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Okay, thank you. Please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1017 appropriates $1.4 million from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund to create opportunities for arts, arts access, and arts education projects in two museums, the museum in St. Paul and also in Rochester and additional locations around the state. This appropriation will allow the museum to expand access to the museum in St. Paul and Rochester and at these other sites by developing a new model for creating and delivering more dynamic museum experiences, introduce a changing lineup of exhibits, extend artist and maker-led studio programming into communities around the state, and engage community partners to enhance exhibit themes. I've had the privilege of touring the St. Paul Museum. That was last year or the year before, but we have done that. They do fine work there. I'll also just mention that we have other children's museums around the state that I'm sure will also be seeking some funding, and these do, I think we're maybe up to about six of them now, and they do good things around the state for our youngsters who can learn from this type of environment. But we are specifically today talking about the St. Paul Museum, and which also works with Rochester. And so with that, I have a testifier.
Okay, please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Diane Kreisen, president of Minnesota Children's Museum.
Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. So I just want to start by highlighting that the mission of Minnesota Children's Museums, like the other children's museums around the state, how we word our mission is to spark children's learning through play. We create experiences that are hands-on, open-ended, exploration that's based on the research of how children develop skills and build their brains. So I want to first, though, start with talking about how we have used prior appropriations. You know, thanks to, and so hopefully everybody has, we have a two-pager that I'll be referring to. And so the history of prior appropriations starts on the bottom of the first page and goes on to the second page. And I'd say that thanks to those prior appropriations, we have reached more than 1.5 million Minnesotans with arts and cultural experiences. Our projects have served visitors from all over the state of Minnesota who come to our main museum location that's located in downtown St. Paul. That's what this kind of color block picture here of the state of Minnesota is highlighting, where folks come from. And we know that at our St. Paul location, 25% of our audience comes through a free and reduced admission program, so we make sure to open our doors to families and not have financial barriers prohibit a child's access to these learning opportunities. In addition to that, the polka dot map, as I like to call it, highlights the communities that we've gone to around the state. We have reached beyond our walls to serve families in 27 cities around Minnesota. And the projects that we've done center around five themes. We have opened a satellite museum in Rochester, Minnesota, that has served more than 155,000 visitors since it opened its doors there. And the legacy funding is a key element of helping us provide the same free and reduced admission access at that location. We've also installed literacy-based exhibits in 13 libraries throughout the state. They go from Grand Rapids to Owatonna, and the estimates in working with the libraries there is we believe that that has served about 450,000 visitors since those installations have happened. We also, throughout Greater Minnesota, we developed a literacy-based exhibit that went then and toured communities around the state, where it would stay in a city for about 3.5 months before moving on to the next city. And that went to 13 locations that spread out from Three River Falls to Worthington. Fourth, we have opened a pop-up museum at the Mall of America, while our main museum is under construction as we had galleries closed, and now we're actually fully closed at this moment in time, to provide a children's museum experience while that is happening. So at the Mall of America, it opened in October of 2015 and will run through April of 2017 as our construction is complete. And so we have been able to serve more than 100,000 visitors thus far at that location, and can definitely see the huge bump up in attendance once we fully closed at the St. Paul location for the last stages of construction. And lastly, we do offer new experiences at our main museum that wouldn't be possible without legacy funding, so we can provide a variety of experiences for children and their families. They're from art and maker projects that use real tools, give children exposure to often using those tools for the first time, to kind of hands-on STEM-based activities, such as the opportunity to explore with digital media technology. So in the last three appropriations, we do have the history of our appropriations in this gray box on the bottom of the front page. You can see in our last three appropriations, we received $1 million. This request, if I'll move on to that is at the top of the page, and the table highlights the different very specific initiatives we have. Our request this year is for $1.4 million to create opportunities for arts access and arts education. And as Representative Erdahl said, that is for two museum locations as well as partner sites around the state. To just paint that picture a little bit, at our main museum in the Twin Cities, we do want to create more dynamic experiences that really can delight families with fresh activities. We want to move away from having permanent exhibits, where there might be that tendency to say, oh, I've seen that, so we don't need to, might not go back to see that again. Because we know that the experiences, the hands-on experiences that we have, nurture brain and skill development in children, we really want to encourage repeat visits and increased exposure to new activities. Figuring out how to offer this kind of meaningful variety to families in a sustainable way, that is a challenge that all museums face. But what we want to do is we really want to involve community members. We want to involve their ideas, their talent, their volunteer time to help us develop this new model. These new experiences will likely range from artist-led activities in a studio gallery to changing large-scale collaborative art projects. And then we want to extend those new experiences from the main museum into communities around the state. Just like we did with the Storyland exhibit tour, we will be looking for partner sites in Greater Minnesota. We'll then work with those sites to localize the programming and engage their community. And then at our satellite museum in Rochester, as I mentioned, legacy funding allows us to introduce a changing lineup of exhibits and to engage community partners to enhance exhibit themes. For example, when we hosted the exhibit called Children of Hangzhou, which is one of the largest cities in China, we had Chinese community members that provided culturally based programming in the classroom. Funding also ensures access to families who otherwise wouldn't be able to afford to attend the museum. And with attendance outpacing our small physical space there in Rochester, we're planning to grow the museum. Increased support would help us engage the community in planning for new experiences that uniquely reflect that museum is designed by and for families in the Rochester area. And then across all these locations, that third strategy there about empowering parents, that's really our mission too, is to empower parents with knowledge to enrich their children's learnings. We want to leverage a mobile technology platform that is commonly used in museums to allow visitors to kind of self-access additional information. In our museum and partner sites, we want to customize that content to reveal the learning that's happening in each activity, the learning that is about foundational skill development that's deeper than the actual concrete activity the child would be engaged in. For example, in the studio, the activity might involve sewing or woodworking, but the skill development is really about developing critical thinking skills, which research shows can be cultivated and learned. And then parents can also sign up for ongoing series of tips and ideas for how they can encourage those hands-on activities at home, thus extending the learning and developmental experiences for children. So lastly, I want to just end again by talking about who Children's Museums serve. You know, Children's Museums is the only museum type that is named for who we serve, not the topic that we present. You know, that really helps us to keep our visitor front and center in our mission. And Children's Museums really uniquely serve the youngest audiences in our state, families with children from toddlers to elementary school. In 2015, in the last appropriation, Children's Museums received 1.5% of funding from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, whereas I'd like to note that children 9 years old and younger actually represent 13% of the Minnesota's population. So at Minnesota Children's Museums, I showed you the chart. Yes, we serve families who come from all over the state. And while our museum in the Twin Cities is the largest museum, kind of by far, both in physical size and in terms of audience size, we believe in also having children's museums or in regions around the state that really increase a children's exposure to hands-on learning. I mean, that's why we opened a children's museum in Rochester. And other communities, Duluth, Mankato, Grand Rapids, and now in Hutchinson, have independent children's museums. And that's wonderful. I mean, children's museums, we aren't in competition with each other. We're a collegial, collaborative field that align around a shared mission. And so together, we are advocating for increased funding being directed to children. You know, this funding has a dual benefit of providing joyful arts and cultural experiences for families, and also being educational and developmental for children in those critical early years. And we believe that's a real win-win. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Kazan. Questions from the committee? Discussion? Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was out of the room for a moment, Pastor. Perhaps you covered this, but your current capital project that is ongoing, I think I heard a radio story about a delay. Can you talk about that, or have you already covered it?
Yeah, no, thank you for the question. I haven't. Madam Chair?
Wait, yes.
Yeah, so, yes, we did announce we had been on track to reopen in April, and in the expansion of the museum, there is a four-story glass addition that's been added onto the front of the building, and there's an exhibit where, ironically, we called it the scramble because now I feel like we're really scrambling, but there's a four-story climber that is being built into this space where it goes up all four stories with various ways to climb up it and slide down it, and a netted catwalk 40 feet above the ground. A very unique custom-built structure. Not a lot of vendors in the United States are capable of the steel work that's involved with that. Unfortunately, the vendor that we selected, a family business in California, went out of business. And so we had to find another builder for that. Luckily, the contract that we had with it had a performance bond. So it's not a financial issue. The insurance company is, and that bond covers any increase in cost that are associated with that. But that, because it's so integrated with the building, you know, we have the construction manager can't finish the building until those pieces come in and start to be erected in that space. So it unfortunately impacts our completion of construction on the first floor. So after working through all that, it's just going to take a couple months longer to complete that, which is frustrating to ourselves, frustrating to our members, but it will be fantastic when it's done, and I can't wait.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. So if you could just kind of describe the timeline on that. And also, I believe you've had a temporary exhibit at the Mall of America. Will you be able to keep that open until your new building is ready for occupation?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson. Yes, we have a pop-up museum, thanks to legacy funding, at the Mall of America that has a lease through the end of April. And unfortunately, at this last minute, we are not going to be able to extend that for families. So unfortunately, there's going to be about 4 to 6 weeks when there won't be any children's museum in the Twin Cities, which is unfortunate.
Both can go to Grand Rapids or Mankato.
Duluth. And
Representative Erdahl, I think that's a great idea. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you. So it seems a little disappointing that we're going to be dark for quite a while, and that this glitch in your building process is holding up bringing these services back to the community and to the state. When did you find out that this exhibit would not be able to be delivered?
Yeah, so we got word of the issue with the that the prior company went out of business. We got word right before Thanksgiving. It took a while to sort out the schedule because there is a buyer of the assets, and we were hopeful that that buyer could keep the project on track. But as we have learned, these projects are highly complicated, and just last week we got the detailed schedule from it and felt it was prudent that we needed to communicate a delay. Day after we communicated the delay, we got a new schedule that says now maybe they can open in mid-May. You know, so I'm hopeful that we can accelerate, but felt it was a prudent thing to do to, you know, communicate that we are seeing a delay, so our members, as we know, they're there is pent-up demand for families to have the Children's Museum open again, and we are anxious to get there.
Representative Torkelson.
Oh, final. Thank you, Madam Chair. So is there any truth to the rumor that the company in California went out of business because of the horrible business climate in California?
Ms. Grzen,
yes. No, although I would say this project's so large, we had to engage three exhibit fabrication companies to do it. And I will note that the two other companies are Minnesota-based companies that are coming through right on track. So we have only had problems with one fabricator who was not located in Minnesota.
Other questions from the committee, Maisine? I have one question. You're talking about collaboration with other children's museums, and I appreciate you are acknowledging other children's museums around the state. I'm just wondering if you could just talk in detail about how do you collaborate? Do you share exhibits? How do you collaborate with other children's museums?
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, a variety of different ways. So with, first of all, in communities around the state, we have, with libraries predominantly, we have put exhibits into the smart play spots, we call them, the permanent exhibits, into the children's book area, including the library in Grand Rapids. In addition to that, with the Storyland exhibit, we offered up to partner site locations for them to have, thanks to legacy funding, that this was made possible, that they could have this exhibit in their space. You know, without any expense with that. And I know that the Duluth Children's Museum and the museum located in Mankato took advantage of that opportunity as one example of that. We also often share expertise with each other. In fact, that's how the Rochester location ended up being a satellite museum for us, as over the years, as people would call and ask questions. You know, I know that staff from other sites, you know, come and visit our location and ask about customer service, ask about how do you handle this situation, that situation. And in Rochester, that particular one just evolved into a more formal arrangement of becoming a satellite museum as well, too. Most of us are members of the Association of Children's Museums, which, again, is a professional way where we share with each other what we're learning and a variety of, you know, just of share knowledge.
Thank you. Yeah, it seems as though with funding coming through Legacy to a number of children's museums, it would be nice to hear that efficiencies are there and sharing and collaboration and maximizing the use of the funds would be really welcome. Representative Lilly, did you have a question? Oh, just saw some movement. Any other comments from the audience? Anyone else have comments on this bill? Representative Erdahl, do you have any closing words?
No, just thank you for your attention and consideration.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for our testifiers. So with that, House File 1017 will be laid over for possible inclusion in the Legacy Omnibus Bill. Thank you. We have one final item on the agenda today. It's not a bill, it's a presentation by the Minnesota Public Radio and Legacy, their Legacy Fund request. So if our testifiers want to take their seats, Mr. Newhouse, Mr. Kavanaugh, welcome to the committee. There's cookies up here if you'd like a cookie. Happy Valentine's Day early. Okay. As soon as you're ready, you can go ahead and introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm John Kavanaugh. I am Director of Public Affairs and Government Relations at NPR. Joining me is Brian Newhouse. He's Director of Classical Programming at the NPR as well. I first of all want to say thanks to all of you. By and large, we have met with everyone in their offices already and have explained a lot of what you'll be hearing today. We go into a little bit more detail and try to respect the direction by the chair as far as exact information that he wanted in these presentations. Let's see if I can move here. Want to point out that NPR has just begun celebrating its 50th anniversary. We started in January 22nd of 1967 up in Collegeville. We have since grown into a 80-station network throughout Minnesota. It reaches 95% of the state and over 900,000 listeners per week. We are lucky enough to have a network that provides also for the emergency alert system. We provide the backbone in Minnesota, so when emergencies arise, but that's also in another committee. I do want to say thank you to the committees, those of you who have been on the committee in the past and those of you who have passed our bills. The legacy grant for the 2016-2017 biennium, we received $3.2 million. That's $1.6 million per year during this last or the current biennium. I want to focus a lot of what we're talking about today on the legislative guide for the legacy grants. For Minnesota Public Radio, we focus on four specific areas: preserving Minnesota's cultural history, supporting music education in Minnesota classrooms, experiencing art events live, and highlighting Minnesota artists as well. And if you watched the Grammys last night, you absolutely saw some great opportunities for Minnesota to be focused upon, particularly with Prince at the end. The first item that I want to point out from your handbook or your guidebook is investments in public broadcasting should expand Minnesotans' access to knowledge, information, and access to arts, and Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. One of the programs that we have at Minnesota Public Radio is the archive program. What we do is we spend time archiving news stories, whether they are political, business-related, or cultural, and make sure that for posterity purposes in Minnesota, that students, that educators, that anyone who has interest in history or if you want to go back and look at what other people have said throughout time, that they have access to it. We work with the Historical Society and the Minnesota Digital Library. We had focused on actually archiving 2,000 stories this past year. We have successfully archived 22,000. To me, that's an astounding increase in what we have, or what our goal was. And we look forward to trying to match that this year as well. Another aspect from your legacy funding guide is funding for the arts education should include lifelong educational activities meant to impart knowledge, teaching of a new creative skill, or further developing an existing skill in any arts discipline. At NPR, we have four different classifications that we look at. One is through our classical NPR station. The other is through the current station. Another is NPR News, and then we also have events as well that we do. The methods that we look at is, first of all, access. We want to make sure that people have access to whether that's music or information. The second is to encounter. That is to experience live events. It's not just a matter of listening. It's not a matter of watching it on TV, but actually encountering and experiencing that live music or art. We want them to participate. It's not simply a matter of sitting back and watching a live event. It's actually getting people involved, whether it's students, whether it's adults, that they actually participate in those events. We want to perfect. We want people who are musicians, artists, who are actually already involved in it, to be involved with the professionals, to be involved with artists who have honed their own skills and that can bring them along, bring others along to that level of success as well. Lastly, we want to make sure that we give them the environment to perform. It's not simply a matter of having a good art skill. It's also a matter of being able to put on a show as well. It's also being able to find an audience for what you have developed. In a moment, I'm going to pass this off to Brian Newhouse, who I've already introduced. We have a program that's called Class Notes, which we feel exemplifies exactly what I talked about very well.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Brian Newhouse.
Brian Newhouse.
The Managing Director for Classical Music at Minnesota Public Radio.
Thank you.
We have been very fortunate to receive the funding from this committee. We began about 5 years ago with a change of course at Minnesota Public Radio. As you know, we're a radio shop, and we make radio shows, and that's been typically a one-way proposition. But as our leadership and our audiences have changed, we realized we have to be much more intentional about flipping that conduit around, listening back to our audiences and our communities and trying to be of greater service to them. About 5 years ago, I received a message from our leadership saying we're going to try to organize our activity around some areas of specialty: healthcare, education, the environment, a few others. So for me, in classical music, I thought, how can I be of value to teachers and students around the state? So I literally started picking up the phone and calling teachers and asking them to visit us in our St. Paul headquarters and to engage in a two-part conversation with me. First one is, tell me what your daily life is like. Second part is, how might a media company with statewide reach, how might we be of value to you? The answers that we got from the first part was, what's your daily life like, is a strong chorus of about 30 to 50% of the music educators and the budgets in our state had been reduced between the years 2000 and 2010. Teachers were swamped with demand and strapped for time, and they asked me, what could you do? What resources do you have that can make me more efficient, make me more effective in the classroom? And what you're going to see today is our response to that from Minnesota Public Radio. We call it Class Notes. Our website is free and open to every school teacher. There's no cost. There's no password protection on it. Teachers can come and get it at any time of day, including homeschooled parents. Class Notes artists live in-school concerts that we have put through the funding of this this body. We put artists in schools all across the state. A video library, short 3 or 4 minute kid-friendly videos that deliver music lessons to teachers who may not know how to teach it, but they can play this video, the kid can learn it, and there's also curriculum that we write and we put in the teacher's hands so they'd be a little more equipped to teach to it. An audio backpack is a piece of software we developed that gives teachers the tools to grab a short piece of music and put it in a playlist, and then to use it as a teaching tool in his or her classroom, and when they're teaching all the elements of music. The class notes is the thing I spend the most gets most attention for us. This is a program where we have been across the state as much as possible. With these artists you see here, these are all Minnesotans. And this is how we think we're hitting two birds with one stone, helping kids in schools, but also advance the careers of Minnesota artists. So we're putting these artists in schools all across the state. Here you see some of the track record of where we've gone and how many children we've served. In last fiscal year, it's been about 25,000. This year, we're partway done through the year. It'll probably be another 25 to 30,000 Minnesota schools. This year, around 65, we're on track to hit that. We split it, trying to get as much outreach into greater Minnesota as possible. We want to be good stewards with the funds, so some years we get more take-up of the program in the metro area, so we don't have to spend quite so much on travel. But we also realize we are beholden to all the citizens of Minnesota, so that's why we're very intentional about getting out into greater Minnesota. And I'm thrilled to let you know that this year, this is our fourth year of this program, and we will have served in November, we served our 100,000th Minnesota school child with this program, with these free in-school concerts and the curriculum for the teachers. About half of them are in schools with free and reduced lunch. Sometimes they are much more, sometimes much less. But on average, it's about half of the kids are at or below that poverty marker. And here you see the towns where we've been in. One of the pleasant problems that I get to deal with is the phone rings, as it did twice last week with district superintendent saying, we've heard about this, can you come to my district? And our funding is set, we have a finite limit to it, and what we've often discovered is that demand for this program always outstrips capacity. So we have to say, we'll put you on the list for next year and try to get to you. And that's, as I said, it's nice to know that that's where that you're wanted, and this is actually delivering value to communities. So that's a bit about class notes. The next item we do is try to build community with a project called Bring the Sing. We've been in a couple of different towns. We've just gotten this off the ground last year. It is a community singing event. We started it in Duluth. People from all over the state, we find, want to sing together. If there's a good reason to do it. Now, why in the world is this a good thing to do? If you read the headlines today, you can probably appreciate the fact when people come to sing together, they don't really wear their Republican or the Democrat or the Independent hat. They come to enjoy singing together. And this is the one way we actually try to knit our communities together, by having these are shared experiences, and there's an educational component built into each one of these as well. We went to Rochester in January. It'll be Duluth again next month, and then we'll finish up this current season in Collegeville at St. John's University, where Minnesota Public Radio started. Some of our other legacy programs are on our website. This Coral Stream, which has been a joy to see it grow, because Minnesotans do love to sing. We are the land of 10,000 choirs. We have about 15 hours worth of music that we provide. It's called the Choral Stream, and audiences can hear the wealth of Minnesota choirs in this stream. And it's free, and it's open to anybody who enjoys this kind of music. We're also busy across the state making classical music broadcasts from Duluth, Mankato, Rochester, Fargo-Moorhead area, and putting those on the air and online for everybody to enjoy. Are also very active, the two major orchestras, the Minnesota Opera here in town, the Schubert Club. This is part of our regional broadcast recordings.
Madam Chair, members, in your packet is actually a handout which most of you have already received in office when we visited you, highlighting a lot of those other programs, including some of the live events, Art Hounds, Duluth Local Show, Local Current Blog, and the Local Current Stream as well. We didn't want to spend 3 hours running through all our programs, but wanted to highlight a couple of very incredible, special ones, and also, not overburden you as far as all the other things. We do want to make sure that you are given, however, every opportunity to ask questions about those programs, and also we're more than happy to provide more information with for you in the actual 2016 legacy report that we actually just submitted in January.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh, correct?
Correct.
Make sure
yes.
If your name is correct. A couple of questions here. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe Mr. Kavanaugh. I was particularly impressed with the Civil War Homecoming, the broadcast of that. Just wondering if there was any distribution of that to schools or anything, or awards given or anything like that.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, I don't know if there was distribution since I came on board with NPR in November. However, I'm happy to follow up and see if that's the case, or if not, if we need to follow up and make sure that that schools do have access to that. I do know that under our archive, we have not only a lot of historical news stories, but we also do a lot of musical and some of our radio programs as well that are also on the archive.
Representative Rudolph?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Kavanaugh. And I think they did a DVD on that as well, and there are a lot of fine performances in that one. Thank you.
Favor. Chair Gunther.
Thank you, Mr. Kavanaugh. Before the Legacy Committee was here, how did you get funded?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, we did not have these programs prior to this.
All new because of Legacy.
Correct.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple questions. On page 6 of your, it starts on page 6 under class notes. You have a list of artists here that you bring into the schools. Is that correct? What is the cost of each performance in the school?
Madam Chair and representatives, we are paying the artists essentially union scale. So if they were to give a concert elsewhere, we are providing them the same compensation. I know that number is available. I do not know the number off the top of my head, and I could be happy to supply it to this committee.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So these are artists that perform in other places and get paid there at the same scale as well?
Madam Chair and representatives, what they get paid elsewhere is their particular business and business model. We try to be as fair as possible with them, and for that, with a very basic threshold for that is union scale. And so that's what we use because we have relationships with other artists and other arts organizations around the state. We want to have a level playing field, and that union card is actually a very good place for us to start.
Representative Green, follow up.
Well, thank you, but I guess I'm wondering then, are these where did you find these artists? Did they approach you?
Madam Chair and representatives, essentially yes. Though it is we often hear about artists doing interesting work, and that might be in the Duluth area, it might be in the Rochester area, and we've known that we could pick up the phone and call the Duluth Superior Symphony and ask them for if they have any ensembles that appear within the orchestra who are might go by their individual names, and then and would they be interested to go out on our behalf into area schools. And yet sometimes the calls come to us as well. As this program grows and gets more profile, artists know about it, and they call us and say, we would love to do this. So it's both, actually.
Thank you. Do you get, like, many requests? Are you turning people away, or are you giving them all a venue?
Mr. Newhouse. Madam Chair and representatives, can I ask a clarifying question? Is that the artists or the schools?
The artists. And the schools, too, as long as you brought it up.
Yeah, the schools, we are, as I mentioned, we are disappointing them because we don't have enough funding to provide all the schools with the concerts that they're asking for. So we have to limit it based on the funding. And in terms of the artists, we find that we vet them so closely because they need to be superb musicians and superb teachers and also great communicators to kids. And to find that skill set, those three parts of that skill set, that's a rare artist. Many artists are very comfortable simply in performance, and that's what they train to do. But that's not the DNA of this program. It's really about to reach a child, to inspire a child, and to get them enthused about making music. And that's a rigorous process, so we winnow that down very closely.
Representative Green.
Okay, thank you, Madam Chair. There is another question for now, unless Representative Rudolph spurs me on here again. But you broadcast these as well. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and representatives, that is correct.
And so what is your – how many listeners do you have? You must have some kind of a scale which says how many people are listening at a certain time.
Correct. Madam Chair and representatives, that is correct. Well, to Classical Minnesota Public Radio across the region, we have in a given week, and this is really where there's a little bit more detail I could get into, but in a given week we have about 300,000 listeners to Classical Minnesota Public Radio Network. And depending on when we drop those select performances in, it's a subset of that. Friday morning at 7:30, there are more listeners than Tuesday afternoons at 5:30. But we try to broadcast these with as much exposure across our radio audience as possible. We actually give them multiple broadcasts so as many people as possible hear them.
Okay. Representative Green, do you have one more?
I have one more.
One more.
And then going back to the first question then, you said you paid the union scale. What is the average that you pay a performer or a group for performing at wherever they perform?
Yeah. If my colleague here who actually writes the checks were here, I could get to – excuse me, Madam Chair and representatives. I can get you that number. I do not know it off the top of my head.
All right, thank you.
I'm not generally filling out the check.
Okay. We've got just a little more than 10 minutes remaining, so would you like to continue with your presentation? Thank you.
Madam Chair, representatives, I would love to point out a success story that falls under Ginyard Legislative Guide. Funds for long-term activities should be allocated strategically so that the activity or organization funded can be successful beyond the life of the arts and the Cultural Heritage Fund. There is a day that unless you decide to bring this back to the people to re-up the legacy fund, it will stop funding. We have a very great, successful story through a program called Minnesota Varsity. Minnesota Varsity was established in 2011. It was established with legacy funding. The purpose, would you like to explain more about it, since you actually run the program?
Sure, Madam Chair and representatives. Varsity, as we come to call it, just Varsity, was a spotlight that we were inspired by, frankly, American Idol. And we thought... we experience in our concerts and in our conversations with our communities the astonishing accomplishments of high schoolers who love classical music and who practice hours a day to get good at it. And we wanted to shine a spotlight on them. So Minnesota Varsity was that. Essentially, it's a talent competition that we have a vetting process. Anybody can record themselves. We ask them to send in an iPhone video, audio and video, and we have a round of judging. And then that goes through another round of judging, and there's no one winner. We wanted to make it a bit more inclusive, so we spotlight five artists on the stage at the Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul each spring as what we call our spotlight artists. And it's really to showcase their accomplishments and to applaud them and to inspire other kids across the state to do likewise. I'd invite anybody to show up. I think it's the last Sunday afternoon in April this year at the Fitzgerald Theater. It's jaw-dropping what these kids can do. That's Varsity.
Madam Chair, representatives, I'd like to point out a family from northern Minnesota up in Thief River Falls, the Drevlo family. There have been four Drevlo children who have participated in this program and have been very successful. Actually, all of them are still doing music in the upper level right now. I point out a quote from Brianna, who is now at Bowling Green University doing her doctorate in musical studies, and it is just incredible to read her story and the others as well. But she gave classical NPR Minnesota Varsity part of the reason why she actually was able to go to Concordia University in Moorhead and then to continue on with her doctorate studies as well. The part of the success I want to point out is, again, NPR no longer relies on this legacy funding, and I think that's ultimately the goal that everyone wants, is that to develop a successful program that can go on its own funding and perhaps giving other programs an opportunity. I think what the legacy funding has done is removed a risk in establishing a program that gave us a little bit boost to get the program going, and now it can function all on its own. Following in the rest of our PowerPoint presentation, which you have in front of you, is a breakdown of not only the spending that we have according to each item that I previously pointed out as far as our goals are concerned, and the other slides actually go through and talk about what our goals are and how we have met them. I want to point out a couple things about those slides. First of all, the administrative cost for our legacy projects right now is at 3.44% of the grant. Again, I think we're quite proud to maintain or to limit the costs that we need to for administration. The other thing is that under the different, we'll go to the next slide, under the different project titles and our assessment methods and our measure outcomes, you'll see that we've been very successful in meeting or going above and beyond those. The only qualifier that I place on that is that the asterisk in the areas, for example, stream requests, we projected it was going to be 38,000. We ended up with 380,000. We ended up with 562,000. That's because actually, with the death of Prince, we had a demand on our on everything as far as Prince was concerned. NPR served as the archive, served as the information base for a lot of the media throughout the United States and also throughout the world. Madam Chair, I actually will limit... I will move right to our request. Excuse me, I failed to point out that we are coming forward with a $3.5 million request. We are looking at expanding and meeting the expectations of schools and superintendents and parents throughout the state regarding our class notes program.
Thank you, Mr. Newhouse. Mr. Kavanaugh, does that conclude your presentation?
Madam Chair, yes. Okay. We'll cut it short.
Okay, is there anyone else that would like to testify or present? No. Chair Gunther has a question.
How much of an increase is that?
Madam Chair, Representative Gunther, I believe that's a $300,000 increase.
Is that due to increased cost or increased programming?
We're looking at increased programming. Again, there's always increased cost, but it's more the programming.
Representative Gunther?
No.
Okay. Other questions? We have about 2-3 minutes. Any other questions? Okay, no other questions. I thank you very much for an excellent presentation.
Madam Chair, thank you.
Thank you for coming today. Is there any other business to be brought before the committee today? Or any closing comments from our Representative Murphy?
Madam Chairman, Mr. Chairman, have you had any indications of what the amounts of money that might be coming into the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and the four funds protected? Because I noticed that all the bills that we heard today had increases in their requests. And I don't know if the economy has grown that much.
Representative Gunther, it looks like the question is for you.
I think, according to Representative Knobloch, Ways and Means, he feels that it would be an increase from 7 to 11 million. We won't know for sure exactly what it is till the February forecast is in March. But I think that's much better than I heard when I first got the chairmanship. I heard it was negative, like many people expected. We don't get sales taxes from internet sales very often, and they're increasing every year, but it's amazing. Our local hardware stores must be doing pretty good, too.
Okay. Representative Murphy?
No, that's good news, and that's more money for lots of things than perhaps good things.
However, you spread them out through everything, probably not that much.
Did Representative Knobloch indicate whether we had a set amount of money that we had to keep in reserve?
He didn't,
other than what we've been doing regularly.
He didn't do that, although he did tell us that several of our accounts don't have any reserves, and several of them have 2%, but we're going to stress that we would like to have 5% across the board. I think it's only fair. And not that we'll cut anybody off if they don't, but we certainly want to stress that, because it could be a year that we will have a decrease, and we want everybody to be prepared for that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Good questions, Representative Murphy. Any other closing comments, Representative Gunther, Chair Gunther?
No, I think you did a wonderful job.
Thank you for the opportunity. Enjoyed this today. Mm-hmm. Well, with that, we adjourn the meeting. Thank you.